Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find in the middle of Daf Kuf Dalid. The Mishnah, Hamakabel Soda Mechaveroi, one who receives a field from an owner to cultivate the field, Vehovira, and he doesn't plow nor plant the field. The word Hovira, from the word boor, which would mean uncultivated. He leaves it uncultivated, barren. Shomen oisa kamaru yolasos. An estimation is made. How much would a field like this be fit to produce? The noisein lo. And the worker will pay the owner. Shekach koisiv lo. Because it is that. It is in accordance with that which he agrees upon. Kosev literally means he writes out. The worker writes to the owner that's hiring him. He says, "Im oivir velo avid ashalem b'meitva. If I leave it barren and do not cultivate it, I will pay you in proper terms. B'meitva, it means literally in with good stuff. I'll pay you full payment." Rashi points out, and I hope those of you who are tuning in now are not listening for the first time, but had listened already through our previous year. If, of course, you are a first-time listener, so welcome to Gemara Markings. But nevertheless, we are going to make reference to that which we have learned earlier in our previous year. And we saw that at the very top of this omid, which was at the latter part of our Kuf Gimel recording, we spilled over to Taf Kuf Dalet, as you can see. The Mishnayos, from this point on, some of them apply to a Chocher type worker, and some apply to an Oris type worker. We're not going to go over all of that now, so as not to be overly repetitious for those who are familiar already with these things. But nevertheless, this particular Mishnah has value as application to the case of kablonus or arisus, where the arrangement was worker and owner split a percentage of the harvest. If you were talking about the other kind of arrangement where the worker provides the owner with an objective amount, then he would, under all circumstances, have to provide that objective amount, whether he worked the field or not, so that the need for some type of field assessment, how much would the field be able to produce, would have no relevance to a chakirus arrangement. Now, as we turn to the Gemara, you immediately encounter some new markings, and on the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh, our structural note, we feature the first marking, the house marking, which is followed by a double underline. These are series markings, and we indicate under the Mivneh, the structural note, in the margin, Rishima Shel Tanoim, we'll see a list of Tanaic personalities, Shehoyu Dorshim Loshin Hedyo. That's an expression that we see in the Gemara, which in and of itself, which it itself needs explanation. What is Dorshin Loshin Hedyot? So Rashi, if you look above where the Gemara commentary begins, Rashi says, Doresh Loshin Hedyot Shehir Gilu Hedyotis Lichtoiv, where common people would write into contracts, Shelo Ketakonas Chachomim, not based on some type of rabbinic enactment. Nevertheless, common practice arose and developed. These rabbis noted the language that evolved through common use, and based on their understanding of the intention of those expressions, they issued legal rulings. Now, this idea of Darshan Lashon Hedyo, our note continues, we have a list of Tanoim that noted the Lashon Hedyo, b'migvan noisim, in a variety of topics. Number one, Arisus, the issue of an agricultural worker, the sharecropper. Number two, Korban Ishto, having nothing to do with cultivating fields, as you can see here, dealing with sacrifices that a woman had obligated herself or become obligated in bringing. What are a husband's expectations vis-a-vis his wife's sacrificial obligations? Number three, Mamzerus. This has to do with children that are born from illicit intimacy. And number four, Mashkoin, an issue concerning collateral. And number five, Ksuba, the money, financial obligations that a husband has toward his wife. So these are five different areas, quite unrelated areas, but what appears common is this idea of darshaning Loshen Hedyo. Now, the Gemara. Rabbi Meir Hoyodoresh Loshen Hedyo. He would base legal rulings on common expressions found in various contracts. Desanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, Im Oivir Velo Avid, Ashale Bemeitva. Rabbi Meir, based on this, if a person claims, if I leave the field barren and I don't cultivate it, I will pay you a full proper payment. And Rabbi Meir ruled upon that if someone indicated thusly, he will have to come up with the payment. Now, let us take a look at the Tosfos commentary. Hayadorish Loshen Hedyot, Lashono Shelo Tiknu Chachomim Lichtov, expressions that the rabbis did not enact. Ela Hedyotis Hurgulu Lekaisvan, Hayadorish. Rather, commoners accustomed themselves to expressing these things. He would Doresh. He would rule upon them. And now Tosfos adds, Vafilu Lo Kosav, even if they weren't actually written out. Ki'ilu nichtav, it is viewed as if they are written. In other words, you have situations where it was such a common acceptance, they would be binding even if it weren't written out. The idafke kishikosav, if this approach of Doresh Loshen Hedyo is only in cases that these are actually written out, ma hoyo Doresh pshito sheyesh lekayim kamo sheyisna, and it would be obvious that you have to fulfill that which you wrote out, that which you agreed upon. To ha'olav asmachtahi, we're not dealing with situations that are merely asmachta. Asmachta are expressions that people may express without really intending to fulfill them, simply because they don't expect that situation to ever arise. So people might express their commitment to certain things as a result of situations that they don't anticipate arising, so people aren't necessarily bound to those. That's asmachta. But here we're not dealing with that kind of situation. Let's continue. Number two, Rabbi Yehuda Oyodorish Loshen Hedyo Desanyo. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Odom Mevi Korban Oshir Al Ishtoi. First, we'll translate. A person who marries a woman has to bring the sacrifice of a rich man for his wife. Now, what do we mean by the sacrifice of a rich man? First of all, in the realm of sacrifices, there are different kinds of korbanos, of sacrifices that are dependent on a person's income level. Now, we look at Rashi, Adam mevi korban osher al ishto, shehu chayev korban leidasa v'tzar asa, a man who's married to a woman and she gave birth, or she experienced tzaras, a type of skin discoloration that results in the bringing of sacrifices, v'imhu osher, if the husband himself was a man of means, ein yochel lomar, he cannot say regarding his wife, he ain't law klum v'tipader b'korban oni, she's got nothing, let her get away with the poor man's sacrifice. The examples that Rashi cites involve sacrifices that exist on a sliding scale based on income level. We call them a korban oyle v'yore, based on your level of income. So the this source that we're in the midst of, as a result of what a man writes in his marriage to his wife, it becomes obligatory upon him to supply her sacrifices based on his financial abilities, so that if he's a man of means, he must provide the more expensive type sacrifice, and not the korban oni, the poor man's lower cost sacrifice. Whereas the korban osher will involve an animal, the korban oni would involve birds, and on some occasions even a meal offering. So now let's go back to our Gemara text. Rav Yehuda says that a person brings a korban osher al ishto, v'chein kol korban v'korban shi chayeves, and likewise regarding any sacrifice she is obligated in, shekach koisev la. He writes thusly, achrayas dislech olai min kidmas dena. So based on this expression, we are given to understand that the husband is obligated to provide those kind of sacrifices that he can afford, even though she might have nothing of her own. Hilo hazokein hoyodoresh loshon hedyo tesanya. Anshe Alexandria hoyu mekachin es nishoisehen. The people of Alexandria, a famous community in Egypt, would marry their wives, ubishask nisosin lechupa, and quite unfortunately, when they were going to enter the marriage canopy, boyin achirim v'chayfeno samehen, others would come along and grab the brides from their husbands, ubikshu chachomim lasus b'neim mamzerim. And the Chomim figured that, well, the children that are born from this illicit relationship are going to be declared as mamzerim. In other words, the woman, at the point that she's entering the chuppah, technically speaking, she is already considered betrothed or married unto the husband. He offered her at some time in the past kiddushin or erusin. That makes her into an ashes ish, a married woman. The marriage canopy is for the purpose of concluding the marriage process, consummating the marriage process. But up till that point, right before the chuppah, she was already married, so that if outsiders are going to grab her and have intimacy with her, produce children, those are mamzerim, they're illegitimate. Omar Lohan Hillel Hazokim. So Hillel addressed the people of Alexandria. Havil li ksubasimchem. Bring for me the marriage documents. And this ksubasimchem, Rashi points out, these were written on the day of the erusin, the day of the initial marriage proposal. Havil lo ksubasimon. They brought to Hillel their mother's marriage documents, umotso shekosuv bohen, and he discovered the following text written in them: lecheshek tikonsi lechupa havi li leintu. Upon your entrance to the marriage canopy, only then be unto me as a wife. So that It's true, money was offered to her before the marriage canopy. However, it was offered conditionally, so that the marriage, the money given to by these men to their wives, was on condition that they reach the chuppah, and that there would be no effect of the kiddushin of the initial marriage until that point. So if the women were grabbed right before they entered the chuppah, who were they grabbing? Who were these outsiders grabbing? Unmarried women. They were still totally single. Because, as we said, the initial marriage proposal was conditional upon reaching the chuppah. But if they don't reach the marriage canopy, then there is no marriage at all. As a result of that, Hillel declared them as being kosher, meaning they're not mamzerim. They are children born from single women, from unmarried women, and although that's an undesirable situation, but that does not result in mamzerus. Mamzerus is the child born from a woman who is, we'll say, prohibited on a prohibited to the man because she is married to someone else. And there are, of course, other kinds of illicit relations that we're not going to get into now. Because for our purposes, the issue of her marital status is of immediate concern. So if she's not married at that point because she hasn't reached the chuppah, she's single because her initial marriage was conditional. Once again, because of this expression of that's the Loshon Hedyot that Hillel focused on that enabled him to rule that the children born from these women were not Mamzerim. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho Doresh Loshon Hedyot Desanyo. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho Oimer Hamalves Chavero Lo Yimashchenenu Yoiser Mechoivoid. One who loans money to his friend, the court-appointed agent is not to extract from the borrower a mashkon, collateral, valued more than the loan. Shekach koisev lo, because it is thusly that that the borrower writes. And again, here we have the Loshon Hedyot that we want to focus on. Tashlunta di'is lochalai kol kabal dichi. A lot of Aramaic over there. But all payments that you have from me are kol kabal dichi. Means that they correspond to this item, to the item that you're taking as collateral. The Rashi says, Shekachu kaisiv kol tashluma diislach alai kol kabal dichi, im meshiv loy es ha'ovoy lizman meruba. This is a topic that the Torah itself addresses, a situation where a lender received collateral. However, the borrower needs the item. So the lender returns the collateral item to the borrower for, in this case, Rashi says, for an extensive period of time. Shomen es hamashkon, we evaluate the cost of that collateral. The kosev lo ze bishtar, and the borrower writes in a document, you loch kol tashlumin olai lipora mimeni demei mashkon ze. That let it be all monies that I owe you, that you have to collect from me, correspond to the value of this mashkon. Ve'im mishkenoi yoiser al chovo nimtso geva shelo kedin. And the result then would be that if the lender receives a mashkon worth more than the value of the loan, and as we saw, he would then return the mashkon to the borrower, and the borrower would be obligated to pay the lender the value of that mashkon. if the value of the mashkin is more than the loan, so the lender is receiving more than he has a right to receive. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, based on this loshon tashlumta dislach alai kol kabel dichi, came to the conclusion that a mashkon, a collateral that's given initially to the lender, shall not be more than the value of the loan. Now the Gemara raises a question. Taimo de kosav lehochi. It would then seem to be that the whole reason that the mashkon is limited to the value of the loan is because this is what was written out. Now, is that really necessary to have this written out in order to limit the value of the mashkon to the amount of the loan? Ha ilo kosav lehochi lo kanya. And had it not been written out, would it not nevertheless be still binding? Before we go further, let us take a look at the Rashi. Taima de kosav lehochi klomar. This means to say, loma le lemichtav le. What is the necessity of the borrower writing this out? V'yom Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan has taught, mishkinoi veheshiv loy esa avut. A lender received collateral and gave the collateral back to the borrower because he needed it. Umes halove, and the borrower died. Shomto hamalve me'al bonov. The lender has a right to take that mashkon from the heirs. Even though we're dealing with something that is a portable as opposed to land, the lo hava kishar mitatali diasmi, the lo mishtavli the balchov, and we're not going to view the collateral as standard portables that orphans inherit. Concerning those, we say they are not bound to pay off their father's debt. In the case of an item offered as collateral to a lender, that becomes something different than standard metaltolin. The keva de mashkine, since he took it, the lender took it as collateral, kanye, he acquires it, ki didei leguvainer, becomes like his for collection purposes. So the source that we read, it seemed to indicate that only because this expression was written out, do we say that the lender has a claim to it? And if not it, then a claim to its value. And if it was not written out, would he not have a claim to it? So that's what we're now going to question in the Gemara. Let's read the question again. Taimo de kosav lehochi. It seems from the source only because the borrower wrote this out that it becomes binding. Ha ilo kosav lehochi lo kanya, and had it not been written out, would the lender not acquire the mashkon, the rights to the mashkon? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan taught, mishkinoi veheshiv lo hamashkon. Someone received collateral and gave the collateral back to the borrower, umes, and the love, the borrower, died. Shomto me'al gabi bonov. The lender can take it from the orphans, from the heirs. And as we said, we do not say that it becomes, that's viewed as other metatolin. What's the purpose then of writing out something that would have been understood anyway? The Gemara answers at the top of Omid Beis, Ahani ksiva le geraon. So Rashi at the top of Omid Beis, Ahani ksiva le geraon, Hashtar, the fact that this was written out, as you saw in the source brought by Rabbi Shubin Korcha, Moil lifchois domov. What does that mean, lifchois domov? Im yifchisu demei hamashkon. If the value of the collateral declined, why? Shinishtamesh boi haloiva. the borrower was using it. As we saw, the lender returned it to the borrower for his use, and in the course of his use, it depreciated, so that the value of the mashko no longer corresponds to the value of the original loan. The fact that it was written out, yifra mishar nechosav kechol hakosav b'shtar, this entitles the lender to collect payment from the borrower's other properties, all as is spelled out in that document. Let's continue. Number 5. Reb Yossi Hayadorish Loshon Hedyo. Desanya. Reb Yossi Oimer. Mokoim Shenagu Lasis Ksuba Milve. Goive Milve. Lichpoil Goive Mechza. In order to understand this, we'll take a look at Rashi. Third line from the top. Mokoim Shenagu Lasis Ksuba Milve. Shekoma shekosov b'shtar ksubosa. All that which is written in the marriage document. Marriage document, a reference to the financial aspects of a couple getting married. All that which is written in the shtar ksuba, and here you have a partial quote of what you find in the ksuba. V'dein nedunya dehan olas le mibei nosho lebei baila v'chule. We mentioned that this phrase is what you find in standard ksuba documents. This nedunya is the dowry that the woman brings from Beinosha, from her father's house to her husband, etc. And in the etc., you know that the husband has requirements, that financial requirements that he obligates himself to the wife. So everything that's written in the ksuba, Rashi goes on, nifras mimenu, is collected from him, kishinis armalon is garsha, in the event that she becomes a widow or he divorces her, kederech shebal chov, nifra, as a lender collects a debt from a borrower, kechol hakosav b'shtar milve, as is written in a loan document. Kagon shekoisvin ba, kemoshanu koisvin achrayas dino kabilas alai. Where in a loan document the borrower accepts upon himself responsibility and liens are established on his property. So the way we view the marriage document is the way, I should say, the way we view marriage documents is the way we view standard loans. Rashi says, continues, goive milve. In other words, we said that in places that it's customary to make the ksuba like a milve, goive milve, bal goive meavi habas. The husband is entitled to collect from the woman's father, kol mashe kosu b'ksubasa kilu hilveu. All that he wrote, all that was written into the ksuba, we mentioned just a moment before that a woman brings into the marriage, oftentimes a woman brings into the marriage property. So that which the father had accepted to provide, the husband can collect, ki'ilu hilveu, as if he, the husband, had loaned to that man, to the father. Now, there's another point that we see in this source where the practice is lichpoil, where they would write into the ksuba the value of the properties that she brings into the marriage. There was a practice, and you can see this also in Maseches Ksubas Daf Samach Vov, where they would increase the value by 100%. They would double the value. When it comes to actual collection of those properties, it would only be half of what they wrote into the ksuba. You might ask, why do they write double the amount? So the answer to that is it created a sense of importance in the eyes of the public. People would see an inflated amount. What I was always curious about is that, is it, should we then assume that the public was unaware of these practices of writing in inflated amounts when in reality only half is what would be owed? I suppose they weren't familiar with that. So this practice accomplished what it was intended to create a certain image, a certain level of pride on the part of the couple in the eyes of the public. So just let's read that again, where the practice was lichpoil, to write into the marriage document regarding the amount being brought into the marriage, and it was written in, let's say, double the actual value of the goods being brought into the marriage. When it comes to actual collection, goyve mechza, the son-in-law would collect from his father-in-law only half that amount, the amount that was written in. Nahar Beloi, this is a reference to another practice, Nahar Beloi Govu Tilsa. They would entitle the husband to collect only a third. That's a result of their practice of having tripled the amount. Mereimar Magvi Nami Shvacha. Mereimar would entitle the husband to collect from the father-in-law whatever amount was written in. In other words, if they wrote in double the amount, that's what he would be able to collect. Omar le Ravina le Mereimar. So Ravina asked Mereimar, V'hot Tanya lichpoil goyve mechza. If the custom was to double the amount, the husband would be entitled to collect only half. How are you entitling that husband to collect from his father-in-law the full amount that's written in? Lo kashya. There is no difficulty here. Ha dekoni minei, ha delo koni minei. It depends. If a kinyan was made between father-in-law and son-in-law, so the father-in-law actually binds himself to the full amount. If no kinyan was made, so then you simply have that, we'll call that ritual practice, if you will, that custom, but it's not the amount, that double amount is not binding. Ravina mashbach v'kosiv lebarte. Ravina, in marrying off his daughter, he wrote in double the actual amount of what he was promising to provide. Omru le nikni minei demar. So the family of the groom said to Ravina, let's make a kinyan to that effect, that to the amount that you're writing in. Omar lehu, so Ravina was one step ahead of them, and he said, "E mikne lo'ichval." If we're going to make a kinyan, then I'm not going to write in double the amount. E michval, if I'm going to write in the double amount, lo mikne, then I'm not making a kinyan. Hahu gavro di Omar lehu. There was a man that was anticipating his death, and he said, Havu lo arba mea zuzi libarti biksu basa. We'll translate. He says, give 400 zuz. Zuz is a denomination of currency. Give 400 zuz to my daughter in her ksuba. And now we have a question we need to clarify. Sholach Rav Acha bre de Rav Avyo lekame de Rav Ashi. So Rav Acha sent to Rav Ashi. What does this man mean? What do these instructions require or result in? Aleph, and you'll see O, Beis. First possibility. Arba mea, de inun tamni mea. In other words, he says, give her 400, but that means write in the ksuba 800, so that the result would be an actual 400 given to the daughter. Oh, arba mea zuzi de inun mosan. Or is his intention write into the ksuba 400, which in reality would be that she's provided with 200? So the question then is the 400 the result, or is the 400 that which is to be written in initially? Omar Ravashi. You still have a diamond and also Roman numerals 1 and 2, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, we indicate Shnei Lishonos B'Tshuvas Ravashi, two versions of Ravashi's response. So, Omar Ravashi, Chazinon, we evaluate, we look into this. E Omar Havu Lo Arba Me'a Zizi De'inu and Tamni Me'a E Omar Ksovu Lo Arba Me'a Zizi De'inun Moson. So, if he said Havu Lo Arba Me'a Zizi, if he said that, which means give her 400, the result of that, or the intention is, the inun tamni sori means that they are 800, meaning right in 800. If, however, he said, not hovu, but ksovu, right 400 zuz, then exactly that, write that amount, but the result would be the inun moson. The result would be, for actual collection, only Moson, 200. Iko Diamri, Omar Ravashi, another version of Ravashi's response, Chazinon. We evaluate, we have to investigate. I Omar Liksubasa, the emphasis on the lamed of this word, Liksubasa. Then the result is Arba Mea Zuzi, the Inun Tamni Mea. She would receive 400 after they're having written in 800. The Iomar, if not a lamed, but with a base before the word big subasa, then the result is Arba Mea Zuzi. The man is expecting them to write 400. The Inun Moson. The result would be then she collects 200. The Gemara, though, has its own idea. Velo he, and it rejects that which we just said, and it says velo not so. Lo shno diomar liksubasa, velo shno diomar bigsubasa. If it's dependent on the letter, whether it's a lamed or a beis, it makes no difference. Arba mea zuzi diinun moson. The result would be that they write 400, whether you say liksubasa or bigsubasa, you write 400. Which in reality means she will get 200. Ad Omar, until you see the expression Havu La Stama. In other words, if he said Havu La Arba Mea Zuzi without the words Big Subasa or Lik Subasa, then we would say she gets 400 and they would write in 800. On the side of the Gemara, in anticipation of the new section, being that you see we have a slash mark indicating a new trend of thought and also new markings. So under the Mivneh, the structural note, the crown shape appears. We indicate Hahu Gavra. That you'll see that expression emphasized a number of times as we go on. Mikrim Miuchadim Akshurim Larisim. Special cases that are related to sharecroppers. The initial topic that we have under our Nosei heading, Asmachta. We made reference to Asmachta earlier. Oris Shomar and Oris, a sharecropper who says, E Movarna Lo, if I leave the field fallow, Yahivna Alfa Zuzi, I'll pay you 1,000 Zuz. The concept of asmachta, just to repeat, is a situation where a person states or attempts to guarantee something that he doesn't really anticipate ever arising. So that you can have situations where a person states certain conditions that he does not believe will ever arise, and he can say that if these conditions are not met, so I will pay you thus and thus, or I will do thus and thus. Once again, these are comments statements made without real intention behind them. Now, we turn to the Gemara. Hahu gavra dekavil ara mechavrei. A man received a parcel of land to cultivate. Omar, and he declared, im ovar nolo yahiv noloch alfa zuzi. If I leave it fallow, I will pay you 1,000 zuz. Ovir tilsa. And he left a third uncultivated. Amri nahardoi. Dinohu dioyevle tlas meo tlosin vitilsa vitilsa. The law requires that he shall come up with one third of what he said, which would be 333 1/3. Rava Omar, Rava says nothing of the sort. Asmachto hi vasmachto lo kanya. In this man's initial statement, he said it without real commitment to it. As we explained, he said it was in an asmachta form. He said something that he didn't anticipate ever coming to be. And statements like that are not binding. The Gemara asks the Rava, Maishno Mehodisnan, according to Rava, what's different about this case than that which is taught in the Mishnah? Im oiver velo avid ashalem b'meifa, where the worker says, if I leave it fallow and do not cultivate it, I will pay you full payment. So there you see that he is bound to compensate in the event that he leaves it fallow. The Gemara says there's a difference. Hasam lo kagozim. In the case of the Mishnah, he wasn't exaggerating. He was saying, I will pay you the amount that is due. And we saw that we would assess how much is a field like that capable of producing. And that's what he would have to pay. Haha. In our case, kevan de ka'omar milsa yiserta, since he said something extra, meaning, let's just assume for argument's sake that the field that he was offered was going to produce far less, even under the best of conditions, far less than 1,000 zuz worth of produce. And yet he said, I'll pay you 1,000 zuz. He was exaggerating. Guzma bi'alma hu dekagazim. He was merely exaggerating. And that is not binding. Hahu gavra dekabil ara l'shum shami. It was a person who received a field in anticipation of planting sesame. And sesame are more valuable, more expensive than wheat. And what did he do? Zarachiti, and he planted wheat. Let us note another detail. In drawing nutrients from the soil, wheat depletes the soil less than shumshamim. So you can see there might be a relationship between the fact that the shumshamim are more expensive, they're more valuable. That certainly could very well be associated with the fact that the shumshami deplete the soil much more than chiti. So anyway, what do we have here? A man was anticipated in cultivating shumshami and he planted chiti. Ofta chiti kishumshami. You notice we have a double underline, and on the side of the Gemara, this double underline is explained under the Nosei Mivne heading. We have here Shnei Mikrim. We'll see two cases in the Gemara, Shebuena Oros Shina, where the Oros, the sharecropper, deviated from what he was supposed to do. Uvimkoim Lizra, Shumshimin, Sheim Mivchim, and instead of planting the sesame, which produce a greater profit, they planted wheat. And in both of the cases we'll see in the Gemara, the owner doesn't end up losing. In the second example that we'll see, he even profits. So let's go back to our Gemara. We have a man that was anticipated to plant sesame, and he deviated, he planted chitin. And the result was that the value of the chiti in that case was kishumshami. Of the chiti, kishumshami. The chiti ended up growing and being the same value as the shumshami would have been. Sovar Rav Kahana Lememar. Rav Kahana thought that in terms of calculating the say, the financial arrangement, Menaki le kachsho diara. Let's take a look at Rashi, just a couple lines up from here. Menaki le baal hakaka me chelko, the owner of the property, shall subtract from his portion de me kachsho diara. Ma shoiso makheshes, that amount that would have been, or say the value of the depletion that would have been, im hoyo zoro shumshamin, the greater amount of depletion and hence depreciation, had it been planted as shumshamin, yoyse mishazoro chitin, more than the planting of wheat. Velo yitobo chitin kishir shumshamin, and being that that's the case, the owner will not receive the chitim corresponding to the shumshamin. Sharei lo hikisha kol kach machmas achitin. After all, his soil did not depreciate as much as had been anticipated. So in the sense that he's saving that amount, he's saving that increased depreciation that would have been, so the owner should be entitled to take a slightly lesser amount of chitim than he would have taken in shumshamin. So this is what Rav Kana thought initially. Omar le Ravashi Rav Kana. So Ravashi says to Rav Kana that that's not so. The owner doesn't have to take, we don't anticipate or expect the owner to take less because he suffered less depreciation. Amri Inshi. It's a common saying. Kach she'ara velo l'chushmara. Literally, let the land be depreciated and not the owner. The Rashi on this, Omar le Amri and she kochushara v'chulei klomar hoyolo lizra shumshamin. This worker was supposed to plant the sesame. Afilu oisem acheshes kaka yoser. Even if there would have been increased depreciation, v'li kochushmar litol achshav pochos, and not have a situation where the owner will now take less. The yirav hu ubeso, and as a result of taking less, there's less cash, less income, and thereby go hungry him. He and his household. So when it comes to, let's say, objective income, we focus in on that and do not insist on any discounting because of less depreciation. Now, let's continue in the Gemara with another incident. Hahu Gavra, the Kabul Ara L'Shumshami, Zorachiti. Very similar situation. He had anticipated that the worker would plant sesame, and instead he planted wheat. Of the chiti tfei min shumshami. In this case, the chiti produced more than the shumshami. The value of wheat had increased to the point that it was worth more than than sesame. Sova Ravina lemeimar. Ravina had the thinking. Yoyiv le Shvacha de Beni Beni, that the owner would give the worker the difference. In other words, there was a certain anticipated or a certain value of shumshami. So you calculate that value, and then understand that that the wheat was worth more. So that difference would go to the worker. Omar le Ravacha midifti the Ravina. Otuhu ashbachara lo ashbacha. Are you assuming that the worker is the cause of the increase and not the land? No, the land is also responsible for the growth of the wheat and hence that increased amount. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that once again we have a new point, new trend of thought. Before going on in the Gemara, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading. which reads, Hi Iska. An Iska is a situation where someone owns merchandise and he gives it to an agent of his to sell and profit, and the owner of the merchandise and the salesman will share in the profits. How do we view the principal value of that merchandise when entrusted to the salesman? So we view it, the iska, as palga milva upalga pikadon. It's viewed as half a loan and half an entrusted item. What's the difference between something that is viewed as a loan and something that is viewed as a pikadon? Something that's viewed as that something that is a loan, so the shomer, in this case the one who receives it, the salesman, has unconditional responsibility. No matter what happens, even if it's a mishap beyond his control befalls the item, in the case of a milve, like in the case of a regular loan, the money has to be paid, the value has to be accounted for. In the case of a pikadon, so there is limited responsibility. In other words, if something, some mishap befalls that's beyond the salesman's control, he does not have to compensate. So when we evaluate the merchandise, and we say, let us say you have merchandise that's worth $100, we would say 50 of that is viewed as a milve, as a loan to the salesman, and he will take that, we'll say, imaginary 50% of merchandise and profit, and that profit will go to the salesman. And the other 50%, the other $50 worth of merchandise that was entrusted to the salesman in order to create profit from that on behalf of the owner of the merchandise. And with that description in mind, then you can understand that once profit is realized, so technically speaking, 50% will go to the salesman, and 50% of the profit will go to the owner. Because of laws regarding the prohibition of taking interest, and interest is payment for to a lender in exchange for his having loaned money, so the halacha says that the owner, in order to avoid a problem of interest, the owner would have to pay the worker a fee, we'll call it a service fee, for expending his efforts in order to achieve a profit for the owner. Without that fee, we have a situation where we would say, in exchange for the loan that he, the salesman, received, he was willing to invest efforts and energies on behalf of the owner. Well, that would translate into interest. In addition to giving the owner, in exchange for the owner extending him this loan, he, the worker, is willing to invest energies in, I should also point out, maybe it's obvious, but the salesman is going to return the entire principal value to the owner of the merchandise. They're simply going to split in the profits. So where does the interest issue come up? Well, the owner is going to get back all his principal value, plus the worker invested efforts on behalf of the owner so that the owner could also realize profits. How do we then circumvent that extra effort that the worker invested would otherwise be viewed as interest in in return for the owner having extended the merchandise as a loan to the worker for his own profits. So in order to circumvent that, the halacha says that the owner shall pay a fee for his services, so that the services are covered by the fee, and then the splitting of the profits and return of principal value to the owner will not represent a problem of interest. There is another method of circumventing the ribis problem, and that would be if we were to view the principal value as, let us say, one-third loan and two-thirds pikodon. In that case, the worker, the salesman, is obligated in an unconditional fashion, which we called a loan, less than half of the entire amount. So that if the worker, if we view it as one-third loan and two-thirds pikadon, so we've gotten around that problem, the problem of ribis. These points will be revealed in Rashi a little later. Let me just correct myself, a slight error there. The one-third, two-thirds would be in terms of if the worker accepts, if the owner and worker accept the situation where the worker, I should say the owner would get one-third of the profits, that would be okay. That's featured in the Rashi a little bit later, as we said. We'll wait till we get there in order to expand upon that. First, the Gemara. Ha Omri, Amri Nahardoi, Hai Iska. Iska is the merchandise given to a salesman. Palga Milva Upalga Pikadon. It's viewed as 50% loan, and which means unconditional responsibility, which is beneficial to the owner of the merchandise. Upalga pikodon, and 50% viewed as an entrusted item, which is beneficial to the salesman. This idea of splitting it, partial benefit to owner, partial benefit to salesman. Avud Rabbonan Milsa, the Rabbonan made a ruling, de nicho le la loive, ve nicho le la malve. Is beneficial to both the borrower, in this case the borrower is the salesman, and is beneficial to the malva, to the lender, in this case the owner of the merchandise. Now, the Gemara observes, hashto damrinan palga milva, that now that we say that 50% is viewed as a loan, iboi lemishti be shichro shabir domi, if the salesman would want to take that 50% and, literally speaking, and buy beer, use it for his own purposes, as opposed to investing it and making profits from the entire sum, the entire amount. Well, he should be able to do so. Because, as we said, 50% is on loan to him. Rava, he disagrees with this first approach, and that's why we call him number two. Rava Amar, Lahachi Kori Le Iska. The arrangement of merchandise given to a salesman is called by the term Iska. There's a reason for calling it an Iska. The word Iska reminds you of the word asek, an involvement, and in this case an investment. The Omar Le, the owner, says to the salesman, Ki Avina Loch, when I gave you the merchandise, Lasuki Be, to be involved with it, to profit with it in a large or lump sum. V'lo l'mishti be'shichra, not to take half of it and use it for your personal purposes, including buying six packs of beer and lugging them down. One should also understand that in terms of commercial behavior, transactions, and investments, one would stand to profit more from a larger principal sum than profits realized from a smaller principal sum. Rashi on the third line under the Gemara text says the Asuki Bay, the Mitoch Shit Tistakir B'shelcha Titrach V'tasuk Bo Yofet. So Rashi adds another dimension of understanding that through your profiting from your half, you will invest more energy and efforts to yield more profits. So don't think that the worker should have the right to take half of it and use it for his own personal needs. But rather, the entire sum, the entire value of that merchandise shall be sold to yield profits. And oftentimes when we speak about in Iska, those profits are then the new, let's say the principal sum with the profits are then used to buy more merchandise and sell it further and to realize more and more profits. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Ravidi Bar Oven, Ve'im Meis Nase Metaplin Eitzel Bonov. If the salesman, who we also look at as a borrower, if he dies, the half of that, the half of the merchandise that we view as a loan, is then viewed as metatlin, as portables, with regard to his children. There are laws that govern collection. In this case, we have a loan to be collected, collection from heirs. And those laws tell us that a malve, a lender, has a right to collect from the land, from real estate left by the borrower, but not from portables that the borrower bequeaths to his children. We use the term metaltli diyasmi lo mishtabdi. Portables owned or inherited by heirs are not bound to pay their father's loans. Rava Omar. Rava, again, disagrees with this and says, Lahachi koru le iska. We call the merchandise given to the salesman by the term iska as opposed to calling it a loan, even though there's certain halachic aspects that apply to the iska as would apply to a loan, but it's not called a loan, it's called an iska. Why? The imes, in the event that the salesman dies, lo yaseh metatlin eitzel bonov. The merchandise is not viewed as simple portables with regard to the children, and the owner can recover his whatever investment, whatever he had entrusted to the salesman to profit with. Before we go further, we have a triangle marking, and we glance at the side. We have a mivneh, structural note. We will see Gimel Meimros Shel Rava Be'inyan Iska. Three comments of Rava regarding matters of investments, of merchandise investment. Omar Rava. Chada Iska Utre Shtori Pseida Demalve. We continue the reading at the top of Kuf Hei Omer Aleph. Tre iski v'chad shtora pseida delove. Now the Gemara here is, I would say, uncharacteristically terse. So what have we described? Rava says one iska, meaning would be one one sum of money, one, let's say, one delivery of merchandise that has a value to it. That's what we'll call chariska. If the owner and merchant and salesman would split the iska in terms of recording it in two separate documents, the result would be there would be a negative impact on the owner of the merchandise. He would end up losing. If you have the opposite situation, two separate, parcels of merchandise, that's trei iski, and they were to be recorded in one document as one value, that potentially would be negative, be a source of loss to the worker, to the salesman, to the love, to the borrower. This needs extensive explanation. We simply translated words. We haven't given any concrete examples of what we just spoke of. In order to appreciate this, we go to the Rashi. And Rashi that we're looking at together is in the middle of the wide lines under the Gemara. Chad isko trei shtori, pseida demave. Mishum destam isko, your assumed iska relationship between owner and worker. And we alluded to this before, but we really were waiting for Rashi for a clear explanation. Once again, bearing in mind there are potential ribis problems, laws of interest that could be restrictive. So we look at an iska as tilsa means a third, ba'agar, labalabayas. Baalabayas will profit, will share in the profits to the tune of one third. Upalga behefsid. On the loss side, he will share in half loss. This, we'll say, imbalance, whereby we say that in everything in potential, where on the profit side of things, Baalabayas will gain only a third of the profits. On the loss side of things, he will bear 50% of the loss. Kedomer Beze Neshech, as was taught in the fifth perek of our Masechta, Gabi Shtora de Rav Ilish, regarding a contract involving Rav Ilish, the Elo, and we say, if not, if we don't have this imbalance, Mishazi Keribis, there would be an appearance of interest. The Kevan de Palga Milve, since we're saying half is viewed as a loan, Ilav de Shokil Monsa Bahagra de Palga Pikadon, if not for the Love receiving a portion in the profits in the half that is a pikadon. In other words, if the worker, the salesman, wouldn't get a piece of the profits that is realized from the merchandise that is a pikadon, we said half of the merchandise is viewed as entrusted to the worker so that he can, so from that profit, from profits from that half will go to the owner. So if the worker doesn't get a portion of those profits, ishtakach de kotorach bepikodon mishum ribis de milve. If the worker would get only one half of the profits and not any more than that, it would then appear to be like ribis. In what sense? In exchange for the 50% that he received as a loan, he was willing to torach, willing to invest efforts in the half that was entrusted to him. And that investment of efforts, that extra tircha that he's investing on behalf of the Baalabayas, is like a form of interest payment for having had the benefit of receiving the loan from the owner. How do we get around that problem? By making sure that in addition to 50% of the profits the worker will get from the half that is viewed as a loan to him, he will also get a portion of the profits that are realized from the half that was a pikadon, that was entrusted to him. Therefore, if you have someone that gave two packages of clothing for sale, and they were worth 100, a mona is 100, let's say $100. Nichtoiv shtar shel mona. So then a shtar, a contract should be written up saying that this salesman got merchandise worth 100. Now there were two packages of clothing. That's what we said, trei iski. Refer to it as simply two packages of clothing worth 100. Write up a shtar indicating that the worker received 100. Imafsid ba'achas min achavilus midmei akeren mechamishim hei dinrim. If there was a loss from one of the two packages, now the one package is worth 50, and there was a loss of 5. Umistaker bechaverta tezvav dinrim, and from the other package worth 50, there was profit of an additional 15. And we said if you write up one shtar, ein kan cheshben lehefsid levad ulischar levad, we don't view the loss by itself and the profit by itself. Elo nistakir b'pragak yizu asura dinrim. Rather, we calculate all the numbers together, and you would say a loss of 5 and a profit of 15 is a net gain of 10. And we're skipping the parentheses section in the Rashi. V'yitlu b'aylov me'osam eser dinrim. The owner would get from those 10, we said that an owner would get 1/3 of the profits, so he would get shlish. Shehein gimel dinrim u'shlish dinar. A third of 10 is 3 1/3 dinar. 3 1/3 dollar. V'mekabli yitol shnei shlishim. And the salesman is entitled to the balance, namely 2/3. 6 2/3. However, e kosef alayu shnei shtoros, if there would have been two separate contracts written up, kol chavilo shtar shel chamishim, each package a separate contract of 50, nimsa cheshbon shel kol echo levado, then we wouldn't calculate all of the numbers together to one sum, but rather calculate each one on its own. V'yakabulov hamilve behefsid hachatzi, regarding the package that loss was realized. We said one package was worth 50, there was a loss of 5. Owner has to absorb half losses. So in the loss, he would absorb shehu shnei dinar muhaitzi, 2 1/2 on the loss side. Ubizchar shel chaverta, remember we said there was 15 profit on a principal of 50. So on that, in the schar side, shel chaverta, lo yitol el ashlish, he gets only 1/3. Well, 1/3 of 15 happens to be 5. V'lo nimsa lechelko schar elo shloshimois dainu chamisha dinrim. The result regarding the second package would be a profit of 30 mos, which we didn't refer to before, which is 5 dinar. 5 represents 1/3 of the 15 dinar that was profited. The dinner chamesh sheish mois kesef shiti ve'hare pseido demalve. By having two separate shtoros, then you see that the malva, the owner, loses out, because we saw on the loss he absorbs 2 1/2 dinar of loss. He benefits 5 in profit. So the net profit that this owner would realize is merely 2 1/2. in the previous situation where one shtar was written up, before calculating anything, we combined the two, the loss and the gain, and we ended up with a total of 10 gain. And I should say where we look at it as 10 gain, that's a net total of 10 profit, there the owner would get a third of that, a 3 1/3. So 3 1/3 is more than 2 1/2. The 3 1/3 was realized by preparing one shtar. Therefore, in the words of the Gemara, one iska that you prepare two shtaros ends up with a loss to the malva. Had there been one shtar, then the malva would have benefited more. And the Gemara at the top of Daf Kuf Hei Omer Aleph tells us that if you have Trey Iski and one shtar, so naturally that would represent a loss to the Love. Rashi at the top says Trey Iski v'chad shtar seder de Love kibel hayom mimenu b'mono ulamocher b'mono. The salesman received from the owner today merchandise 100, and tomorrow more merchandise worth 100. The Kosav Shtar Al Mosayim, and they wrote one contract for 200. Hifsid Halovet Kemod Precious, the Lova would end up losing out by the presence of having only one Shtar, as we said at the bottom of Kuf Dalet Omid Beis. Shim Yehe Hefsid Bozeh Oschar Bozeh, if there would be loss on in one case and profit in the other, lo yachshu kol echol levado, by virtue of having one contract, we won't calculate each one by itself. Elo haschar yimalei hakeren tchila, the net profit would be attached to the principal. V'achak achyachloku hamoser, and then they would divide the balance. V'im kosav shnei shtaros kemishpat hazeh mechashiv hefsid shel zeh levad v'aschar shel zeh levad. If they would prepare two contracts, so then the loss of one would be calculated and treated on its own. The profit on the other would be calculated and treated on its own. And in that case, the owner would have to absorb half the loss and benefit only a third of the profit. And what Rava is trying to tell us, after all is said and done, is a piece of good advice. The bechad iska, in the case of one iska, one investment, lichtov chad shtara, then one contract is written up. Betrei iski, lichtov shnei shtari, and in the case of two separate investments, then write up two separate shtaros via dover shokul, and that way things are balanced between owner and salesman and worker. Let us turn back to the Gemara. V'omar Rava, Haiman de Kobel Isko min Chavrei, someone who received an investment from his friend, the worker, salesman, owner relationship, Upasid, and he unfortunately experienced loss. Torach Umalyo v'lo Ode, and before returning the whatever was left, he troubled himself and compensated and literally filled up the loss, v'lo ode, and he didn't tell the owner. Lo motzi omar le, the worker cannot claim to the owner, dori mehech pseida bahadoi, I want you to bear the loss, the initial loss, together with me. Mishum di omar le, because the owner, the malva, can say to the worker, lochi tarchis lemluse, it's for this that you went out of your way to recover the loss, ki hechi de lo likru loch mafsid iski, so that you wouldn't be called, we'll call business loser. The Gemara continues. The Omar Rava, Hani Beit Trei, the Avdi Isko Bahadi Adodi, two people that entered an Iska relationship together. This is, let's see, more accurately describing two salesmen that received merchandise from one owner. Verovach. And they, these two salesmen, realized profit. V'amalei chad l'chavrei, and one said to the other, Ta liflo, let's divide. E amalei idach, if the other one says, Narvich tvei, no, let's continue to profit. Let's continue to reinvest the profits that we've realized to make more money. Dina hu dema'akev. He has the power to be, in fact, a restraining force. And now we'll explain why that is so. The markings that you see are featured on the side under our Mivneh heading. Tainos shel ze sherotze lechalek uchusuf chuvosuf shel hasheni loma lo motzi lechalek. You'll have the claims of the one that wants to divide now, and the other that says, no, let us continue to invest the money to realize more profits. So, e omar le havli palgo de ravocha, if one should say to the other, give me half of my share in the profits, and the principal will continue to, will reinvest the principal value. Omalei, so the other one can say in return, Revocha lekarna mishtabe. The profits are bound to the principal. In other words, it's one sum. You can't split the profits apart from the principal. There is a Rashi that elaborates on this a bit more. We have a little star in the Rashi to help you find it. Just a few lines down from here. Iomar le niflo grivocha. Hashtem eforesh v'yazil. My taimo is le dinakev. Here we go on in the Gemara to explain why one can restrain the other. Iomar le hai niflo grivocha v'ker nitfis. Adayin laharviach bo ad hazman. If one of the salesmen says to his fellow salesman, let's split the profits. And as far as the principal, that will we'll continue to invest that until the final time comes. There was a pre-established date at which everything is brought back to the original owner for division. So prior to that, he's suggesting splitting the profits and reinvesting the principal. Motzi amalei idach, the other salesman can say, Revocha lekarne mishtabe. The principle is bound, that is, the profits that we've realized now are bound to the principle. Shemo b'schor shenase oid nafsid. Maybe the continued sales that we conduct using the principle will realize a loss. V'tzorf sheha revach kayam. The profit must remain intact. L'stakir bo. Ode kedei lemalo sakeren, so as to have available the current profits to reinvest those sums, so as to compensate for any loss that might be experienced by the principal itself. So you can't now just split up the profits and spend them and nothing's left and simply reinvest the keren, they reinvest the principal. What will happen if there is now loss experienced? Now, we go back to the Gemara. V'i omar lei, hav li palgo revocho palgo karna. And if one of the workers says, okay, in view of what you're saying, that the profits are bound to the principal, so you know what? Let's split the whole thing. We'll split the profits and the principal. Omar lei, so the other one can say, iska lahadodi meshubad. The entire iska, we'll say the two parts of the iska are bound one to the other. And Rashi here too elaborates, and let's read it together. The e omar niflog travayu, both the principal and the prophets. Motzi omale, the other worker can say, isko la dodi mishtabed. Everything is related, is bound to the other. V'i naflog, if we split, shemo ani afsid b'schoro she'ekne, I might lose in the sale of merchandise that I'll buy now. Shari kibalti ani lis'aseg bo ados ozman. I accepted upon myself to constantly profit, to buy and sell until that final date. V'mafsid, and if I experience loss, shemo chelek hasheni yistaker, the other half might profit. V'yamale chisoron, and that profit will cover my loss. V'yonu yachad kibanu, v'nishtabdu acholokim zelos, and we accepted the isko initially together, so that with that togetherness in mind, profits experienced in part were designed to compensate for loss in the other part. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Vi amale nifloig revocha v'nifloig karna. If one of them says to the other, you know what, let's split the principal and let's split the profits. V'imoti loch pseida tarino badoch. And if you experience a loss, like we just saw was a possibility, if you do experience that loss, darino badoch, literally I will carry it with you, I will share in that, I will compensate for that loss. Omar le lo, the other one can say no. Mazla de betray adif, the good fortune of two, that means if we stay together, is stronger, is more beneficial than the mazel, than the good fortune of one. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.